You are listening to the Punk News Podcast with John G and special guest Tricky Ricky. It is our twice annual Record Store Day Roundup.
I never bought much music, I just listened to whatever was played. But there was classic rock there on the radio, and it was blowing my mind. And it was all the records no one wanted now, so they were easy to find. So I started getting LPs, they only cost a little, and these LPs were all the ones I needed from the 60s, with psychedelic art on all the great sleeves, much cooler and much cheaper than the CDs, and that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. There wasn't any internet, a lot of times you just took a shot. Pretty soon you figured out which record would be awesome or not. If the year was from the 60s, it was probably good bang for your buck. If the year was from the 80s, it was guaranteed to totally suck. I started learning about the LPs, and that's why education just cost rupees. $3 for this Dylan record, oh yes please. And the Cream and Rolling Stones and Arlo Guthrie's. A giant treasure trove was all for pennies, and that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. By 1994, I had completed all my Zeppelin and Floyd.
Zeppelin and Floyd.
I had all the early Traffic, but their later stuff just made me annoyed.
Made me annoyed.
You realize that the radio just scratches at the top of the dirt.
Top of the dirt.
When $4 can buy you Crown of Creation with a lyric insert. So I had a lot of LPs. My friends were mostly clueless. It was just me in an ocean of cheap vinyl like a black sea. I hardly had an income, but it was easy. An awesome world awaited with the cheap keys. And someplace in the garbage they were just free. And that's the way I caught the disease. I caught the disease for LPs. And then the 90s ended and I wasn't no teenager no more.
Teenager no more.
But I started getting shakes if I was passing any used record store.
Used record store.
I got the finger muscles you develop when you flip through a stack. Crate digging for the cheap and obscure, and there was no turning back. A total junkie for the LPs, and nothing in the world was gonna help me. See me quit no sooner than see hell freeze. And there was nothing like the thrill of getting lucky. I'd be flying 5 feet to the breeze, 'cause the world was still awash in LPs. And I still had the disease for LPs. Nowadays that stuff is so expensive I don't bother to try. Everything's reissued and plus everything is priced really high. The field is overcrowded, it's impossible to get a good fix. So I walk right past the records and I flip through all the used compact discs. Yeah, nowadays it's mostly CDs. No one wants to keep them, so there's plenty. Folk and punk and private press and rap and indie. Bonus tracks and liner notes are just empty. As long as I can still make a good discovery, I've still got that music hunger disease. That disease that I got from LPs. When they were dirt cheap in the 1990s. Whatever people don't want, that's the time to get it. Take a chance on something, it might blow your mind. And if it's cheap, there's less chance you'll regret it. Though I'm drowning in my stacks because of all the stupid albums I used to try. Nowadays, looking back, I just regret the ones I didn't buy.
We begin our semi-annual tradition. And here we are again. So, Ricky, thanks for coming back on the podcast, man. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Oh, it's so much fun to be back, guys. John, sorry, guys. I'm still used to the roundtable. It's been great. This is post Record Store Day. I think I have a bit of a spicy take this year, so I'm excited to get into it. And I haven't stopped collecting records, so I got good stuff, especially since like January to go over. So. I'm excited to hear how your Record Store Day was.
Well, I think you do have a spicy take, Richard. So what we're actually going to talk about some non-Record Store Day stuff at the very top. Then we'll talk about a Record Store Day. And then maybe, Ricky, you and I'll just talk about records we're looking forward to or cool records that we've got recently, like we used to do back in the day. Before we do that, let's play a track. Ricky, what's your track that we got to rock?
So one of the records that I'll be talking about later is from a release from, like, when did this come out? 2021? There's this great skate punk band out of the UK called On a Hiding to Nothing. They put out an album through Thousand Island Records called We'll Probably Be Fine. This just shreds. It's really, really good. So the track I'm going to play from the album is called Try Not to Worry. Again, that's by On a Hiding to Nothing off We'll Probably Be Fine. Here it is.
And that was Ricky's skate punk of choice. But before we get into Record Store Day, a couple things Ricky and I have to address. First of all, Ricky, the Classics of Love record, it has finally pressed, shipped, and we have gotten it. What the A side is 5 super quick tracks with the new Classics of Love, and the B side is a Jesse Michaels etching, and you can also get a Jesse Michaels t-shirt with it. Surprisingly to both Jesse Michaels and Mike Park, unlike the Classics of Love LP that actually I think is still in print, you can still get, the Classics of Love EP literally sold out in less than 24 hours, much to the surprise of everyone. A, Ricky, are you excited to get a physical version of this record? B, do you enjoy this record? C, were you surprised that it sold out in 24 hours?
Okay, so I got mine already. It sounds great. The etching is very cool. That's always a nice touch when you can't do anything with the B-side. I've always liked this EP since it came out, 2 years ago now?
A long time ago.
Yeah, so I'm really happy they got to it finally. It sounds great. I mean, this is, I've been waiting for this. It was interesting Mike Park posted the pre-order at like 9 p.m. Pacific time.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And it was just such an odd time to do on like a weekday. That's an odd time to do a pre-order. So I was surprised it sold out so quickly just for that reason. Otherwise, if it went up at like, you know, late morning or early afternoon, I wouldn't have been surprised if it sold out the same amount of time. What was the third question?
I guess, did you dig it? Did you enjoy it? Are you enjoying?
Of course. Love? Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. I'm late. I'm getting to be honest. I'm late on Classics of Love. I have a first pressing of the self-titled that I just adore. But I'm also excited for, they're not called Bad Optics anymore. They are called Doom Regulator.
Doom Regulator.
So I'm excited for that too. What did you, have you gotten your copy yet?
I have. I got a couple of days after you. Mike Park did a good job of shooting them out quickly. I was surprised that it sold out so quickly because the Classics of Love record has been sitting around for like ever, and the album is fantastic. Everyone that got it loved it, but like it didn't like light the world on fire sales wise or press wise or anything. However, I guess people finally got hip to how awesome Classics of Love is, and the World of Burning Hate EP notably is much crazier. Well, it is harder and faster than the Classics of Love LP, which I love both. So I was very pleased for Jesse and Mike's sake that it did sell out. This is crazy, Ricky. So anyway, I was very pleased for Jesse and Mike that it did blow out real quickly. They say they're doing another issue that might have even more tracks on it, but you know, as with all things Jesse and even things Mike, you know, long-term things tend to take a long term. So we'll see when those come around. This is crazy.
Wait, more tracks on the next pressing?
Well, actually, that's an important thing I'm going to talk about next. But before I talk about that is now that the Classics of Love EP is super, super in demand, the LP, which used to sell for $15, is now selling for $150, Ricky. How do you like that?
That's the self-titled?
Yeah, from 2012, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad I got mine when I did, because I paid a lot more. I paid a good amount for it, but I didn't pay that much.
If people don't know, the Japanese CD version of the self-titled actually has two tracks not available anywhere else, except for one of those two tracks is on the Punk News Band from the PC mixtape, FYI. Or is it on the other mix? It actually might be on the other mixtape. It might be on the My Org mixtape. I forget, actually. It's on one of those two. At any rate, so to answer your question is, as thrilled I was about finally getting the physical version of Classics of Love, World of Burning Hate, and as excited as I was about Jesse and Tim, I was a little sad that, well, I guess that means Classics of Love, or the, quote, new Classics of Love, whatever that band is, I guess that's over. Jesse did kind of a vague post online, and he said, I was about done with music when Bad Optics started, which is now called Doom Regulator, and now I find myself in three bands. So the one band is Doom Regulator. The other, I gotta hope, is Classics of Love. And what's the third band? Nobody knows. Could it be Passage Walkers? Could it be something else? Who knows? But at any rate, you know, I love Jesse, but he loves being vague. So I'm super excited. But the other thing, Ricky, though, is, you know, Tim Armstrong, he spreads the love around, man. He's got Rancid. He's got Doom Regulator. He's got this side project, that side project. Is there a fear of everything being spread so thin that the punch isn't there? You know what I mean? That is definitely a concern.
Yeah, I mean, what, the Rancid album got announced, so I'm sure they're going to be touring for that.
Right.
And then one other thing you forgot, you didn't mention, was he's like executive producer for like every Interrupters album too.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think you are correct. I think he was much more involved in the first three Interrupters records. He was only somewhat involved in the fourth Interrupters record. But executive producer, really, I mean, from a business standpoint, all that really means is he's on the business side, and that he's the business side that gives the green light. Now, an executive producer can be as involved as the actual record producer, or it can literally mean you're just giving your name to a project and that's literally all you're doing. I think he's somewhere in between, but I don't think that takes up a ton of his time. But as I've, you know, I'm a big Tim fan. I think Tim's made a lot of great music, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think his one misstep maybe would be is that he does so many projects that a lot of the projects have like four killer tracks and eight okay ones. Whereas if he did fewer projects and just gave us the creme de la creme, they'd be much better. Whereas in contrast, Jesse barely puts out anything ever, and when he does, it's like the best thing ever. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I mean, listen, I haven't hated the last few Rancid records, but they haven't been like stellar, like Out Come the Wolves level. You know,
yeah,
they've been fine, but they haven't been amazing.
So that's where we're at with regards to Classics of Love. I'm trying to think, is there anything else I want to talk about before getting to record? Was there any news topic you want to talk about, Ricky, before getting to Record Store Day?
Ooh. Oh, man, I wish I had known we were going to do that.
I really should have made a battle plan before we started talking. Well, maybe it'll come
I'll
to
just
us.
I'll just shout this out. Like, just go listen to the new Brutal Youth record. It rules.
Well, they have it. Ricky giving two thumbs up to the new Brutal Youth record. I'm going to play a track. I think I'm going to play, something from Record Store that I should play. I don't know. I'm going to play something that I guess I'll play something from like Off. Yeah, I'll play some Off. This is some Off, and we'll be right back. Ricky, we are back, and our record store days were wildly different. Ricky, yeah. Why don't you tell your record store day first, because I'm going to criticize you.
That's fine. Well, actually, I was very responsible, and I'm curious to hear what you think. So, for the first time in 9 years, I didn't stand in line.
I thought last time you didn't stand in line either.
No, last year I did. I did. I only got I just didn't get everything that I wanted.
Yeah.
And I ended up not being a big deal. I wanted that damned strawberries scented album, and I just didn't get it. I didn't need it. I just wanted that Offspring record. This year, I only wanted one thing on the list. That was the thing. Remember, I think back to when maybe it was a year or two ago when you, me, and Sam were talking about the Cro-Mags record that repress. And you were talking like, you're saying like, why did I get this? I don't know why I got this when we were discussing it. And it really that stayed with me. I was looking through this. I remember looking through the list, and the Ramones album was cool. There was the Generation X album, I think. But I just the only thing that I wanted, because the album rules, I wanted the Off EP. Like FLSD looked just awesome. So it just didn't seem like it was worth standing in line for 12 hours for one record. And quite frankly, I don't want to stand there at a record store for that long and come back with nothing. So what happened was, I figured this out. Apparently, all record stores are allowed to put the remaining Record Store Day albums on their websites or on eBay or on Discogs at 8 a.m. East Coast time. So I got up I was looking for, I was seeing the Off EP going for $70 on eBay, $50. I'm like, I'm not, Saturday night, and I'm like, no, this, I'm not paying this much for the for something like this. It couldn't have been more than like $30, $35. So I waited, and lo and behold, they started popping up on Discogs for like $40. And so what happened was, so I waited, and then the next day, Sunday, I got up at like 4:30 because I saw Amoeba was going to post all their old stuff their remaining stuff online. Some other record stores that I follow also were going to do that, like 123 Go and some other one I found in Ohio. I also follow Smart Punk out in Florida. So I got up at like 4:30 on Sunday, and I was looking through Amoeba. Like, has this, I wanted to buy it from Amoeba, but they just have this really weird wait time thing where like you have to be like in a digital waiting room.
Yeah, I was there with you. I was there.
So I get, so I, at exactly 5 a.m. I refresh my browser, and it's a 50 minute wait. And I'm like, not happening. I'm not doing this again. Cause I had to do that in 2020, and I'm not doing that again. So I saw they were sold out at some one other record store that put them up. So they only had three left. So I went on eBay, and a ton more showed up, and I was checking all the sellers just because like I'm trying to. And so what happened was I found one for MSRP plus shipping from a local Wisconsin record store.
How is Wisconsin local to you, Ricky?
Well, local at true, like local as in like their small little thing, like a small record store out in Wisconsin in Madison. And I went, I'll buy it from them. I'll support a record store digitally. Why not? So it worked out. Listen, 2,300 copies of that. It's not going to go for a lot on the secondary market. I mean, we can get into the prized Record Store Day releases, like the Taylor Swift album, which was pressed in 150,000 copies for Record Store Day, which is bonkers compared to what when you and I used to talk about this yearly. It was fine. I supported a record store. I got the off out the record. It's on its way. It should be here May 1st, and then that's it. But Record Store Day just isn't the same what it used to be. Like, you know, when we were you and I were really hardcore about it, like 5-6 years ago. So overall, I had a good Record Store Day. I got to sleep.
Ricky, I think you're becoming too cool for records. That's what I think. I think you're too cool for Record Store Day.
No, dude, it's not that I've changed. It's that Record Store Day has changed. There's no reason for a Taylor Swift record to be pressed for Record Store Day for 150,000 records, copies. It's just out of hand now. It's just gotten corporatized. And that's my issue. It's like where it was, you know, 5-6 years ago, we saw the major labels creeping in, and it's gone very mainstream now. People, I mean, compared to where we were when I was doing it, you know, in 2013, 2012, 2014, like, I think I did it right, but I'm not going to stand in line for one record, you know, for that long. And believe me, I've done my time. There's actually a video of me on a YouTube channel being interviewed at 3 a.m. at Amoeba Hollywood. I've done it. Believe me.
Well, I would say Record Store Day is always corporatized. And actually, I don't mind Taylor Swift being there, man. I mean, like, I love records and I hope they keep pressing records. And so if getting the kids into records is what keeps the concept of the physical record alive, I'm down for it, man. I mean, I wasn't looking to buy Taylor Swift. So if that gets people in the store and gets people to pay stuff, I mean, listen, Taylor's selling way more stuff than Off. So if Taylor has to carry the weight for Off to exist in record form, I'm fine with that. My Record Store Day was a lot different than Ricky's. It was interesting in this Record Store Day. I was actually surprised. Over the past few years, it seemed to me that Record Store Day has been dwindling a little bit, but I was totally wrong because I usually go to a few places, and the first place I usually go to is Electric Avenue in Westchester, and I usually get there at 5 o'clock. I got there at 5 o'clock this year. Ricky, usually when I get there at 5 o'clock, there's 8 people in line. How many people do you think were in line when I got there at 5 o'clock this time?
Couple dozen.
45.
I know the feeling. I'd get there at midnight and there'd be 60 people ahead of me.
True, but Amoeba is like one of the most famous record stores in the world. But you actually are more hardcore than I. Like, I don't think I'd get in line at midnight, but that's pretty hardcore, Ricky.
Yeah, I've done my time, John. I've done my time.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. So I got there at 5 o'clock, and there was a bunch of stuff that I wanted, and honestly, I went kind of nutty because I got almost everything that I wanted, except for the Flock of Seagulls Outtakes record, which literally, if I had gotten there 1 minute earlier, I would have got the guy in front of me, like, picked up the last one. He's like, "Oh, Flock of Seagulls, I think I know this band." I'm like, "Put it back, you asshole, put it back." And he did it. But I was tempted to go on to Discogs and eBay and pay a crazy price for it. But I thought, you know what? I've got all those songs on the 12-inch original press 12-inch EPs. So it's just kind of dumb for me to waste money on some I already have on record, nonetheless, CD. So I said, you know what? Honestly, I saw an interesting trend. Ricky, kind of before you got into Record Store Day, there used to be this trend where records would shoot way up and then slowly kind of trickle down. Then when you first started getting into it, records would shoot up and then drop immediately down after about a week. Then they would shoot up and drop down after about 2 days, then a day. Now records are shooting up and they're starting to trickle back down again. So just for an example, that Flock of Seagulls record is already down to like $60 or like $55, and there's a bunch of sale online. So I'm just going to wait it out and get it eventually. So anyways, the point being is it looks like I guess with the increased flipper percentage, records are shooting back up, but they are drifting back down. So don't go pay crazy prices on records. I mean, they'll come around again. You know, pretty much every record does come back around again, and they'll drop back down. It's just interesting to see that over the past few Record Store Days, flippers were kind of nullified because everything was pressed in such a quantity that you basically anything you want, you could just go online and buy it for a market price. This Record Store Day was the first Record Store Day in like 3 or 4 years where things actually were super limited and you couldn't get everything that you wanted. But that's all right. I mean, listen, it's just records and they'll drift back down. But
what was
what's that, Ricky?
What was super limited this year?
Flock of Seagulls, bizarrely. Like, that was like a hugely like in demand record. Of course, Taylor, even though they pressed a million Taylor Swift records, that was still like sold out in an instant. Let me think what else.
Taylor Swift one's going for a lot of money, like over $100.
Man, I wish I could have bought one. Damn. Let's see how much that's going for. That's crazy. I walk right past it, Ricky. I'm like, I don't need that.
Yeah, the other one that I was kind of interested in, but I'm thinking to myself, I have an original copy, was that the Attic's Fifth Overture. Like, that has my favorite Attic song on it, but I don't need a second copy of that record.
So I don't even see it here on Discogs. It's got to be on Discogs. That's weird. Is it a compilation or?
It's like outtakes or something like that. I'm looking.
I'm looking right now.
Yeah, Discogs. I mean, there are people. I mean, hang on, let me look at sold.
But you think it would definitely be on Discogs. That's weird. Maybe somebody filed it under the actual album, but it really isn't the album. Oh, here it is. Yeah. I thought is it Folklore, the Long Pond Studio Session? Here it is. It looks like it was on CD first, and now it's on vinyl. Oh, no, it was digital. Now it's on vinyl. All right, let's see how much it's going for on Discogs. $50. Yeah, so it's not that crazy, but still. Anyways, because there was so much that they had that when I went there, I kind of got the fever and lost a little bit of control of myself. First of all, Ricky, I'm surprised you didn't want this Ramones record, man. This Ramones record is pretty cool. It's the Ramones, Pleasant Dreams, the New York mixes, and there's a little bit of controversy as to what it is. Who's the manager? Was it Daniel Ray or somebody said that it was really just demos. Someone else said that it was kind of a ex post facto, like, fake record, and that, like, it's people now, like, radically remixing the record, but to kind of pass it off to something old, which is lame. I don't know that's the case, but I got to say, it's pretty cool. One of the big drawbacks, the older I get, the more I like the Ramones 80s records, honestly. Like, back in the day, I didn't like them at all. Now, I like pretty much every Ramones record, pretty much all the way through. I'm not saying they're on some mediocre songs, but especially on vinyl, when you have to flip it over and there's a little bit of break, I find that the lesser-known Ramones records are actually kind of good. And of course, Pleasant Dreams isn't by far their worst, because it's got We Want the Airwaves, KKK Took My Baby Away, She's a Sensation. So, honestly, a lot of really good stuff on it. Touring is never boring. But I got to say, the cool thing about this record, and I hope it is not some ex post facto thing, but actually a genuine artifact, is it basically removes the 80s production from the record and makes it sound more like a live record than an 80s, you know, super slick record. And I got to say, it's not as different as I thought it was going to be. It still sounds pretty much like the record, but it sounds real good and kind of gives a little bit of different taste on the album itself. I got the Tom Tom Club reissue of the first record, which is really just the CDs, the deluxe CD put out on two records. Sounds great. It's cool to have just that, you know, super deluxe edition of, you know, that amazing record. Let's see what else here. I got the Keith Richards live. I'm sorry, the Keith Richards greatest hits called Vintage Winos or Vintage Vinos, depending on how you ask. It's not Record Store Day's fault, but that release is like 10 years old, and it's kind of a lazy release. And that Keith Richards only has two albums and one live album. Well, he's got three albums now, actually, but two albums and one live album. And so they just took four tracks from one album, four tracks from the other album, and four tracks from the live album and put it on a record or a CD. And they put on one and a half minute long rarity. And so the record has a blank side with an etching. But, I mean, Ricky, do you give a shit about etching on records at all? Well, I mean, with the exception of Classics of Love, which was designed as like a short record, so you got to have the etching on the B-side.
Yeah.
I'd rather have everything on one side, but I don't give a shit about an etching, really, do you?
You know what? Not really. I mean, like, if there's an album or like a reissue where they make it a double album, but they can't fill up the D-side and they put that as an etching, like, that's nice, but I don't need it.
Yeah, right. So the frustrating thing with the Keith Richards thing is it's kind of boring because Keith Richards' solo records really aren't that great. I mean, they're all right, but they're not great. But he does have some interesting rarities. There's a live version of him doing Gimme Shelter, which is particularly interesting because in the demo version, he sings the vocals, but in the studio version, Mick Jagger sang the final vocals on Let It Bleed. There's also him doing Run, Rudolph, Run. There's him doing The Harder They Come. So all these kind of interesting rarities. And instead of digging up any of that stuff, They just said, we'll just throw an etching on the D side instead of putting on any of these really interesting recordings. So kind of a lazy release for completists only. I got Stevie Nicks Live in 1981. That's real cool. I mean, it's been released before on the deluxe edition of the CD, but it is cool to have that on vinyl. I got Clark Kent. Ricky, do you know who Clark Kent is?
No.
Clark Kent is Stuart Copeland of The Police. During the height of The Police, he put out, I believe, four records. One album, one 10-inch, and two 7-inches, I think. Maybe it's only one 7-inch, as Clark Kent. And it's very edgy, challenging, new wave, and even punk. So it's cool to have this on 12. I believe it's a 12-inch version of the 10-inch record. So that's kind of cool to get that. I picked up the Selector. I wasn't planning on buying that, but I saw and I grabbed it, and it was $30. It's Selector Live in 1980. Selector is cool. So that was cool to pick up. I picked up Peter Tosh Live in Boston 1976. Definitely one of Peter Tosh's better live records, but I gotta say, at $46, a little pricey. Although actually, one thing is, Ricky, is I will say prices were kind of back down to being reasonable this year, I thought. Most of the single records I got was $26, which I got to say, while is not cheap for Record Store Day, I think you got to say $26 is reasonable for a 12-inch LP on Record Store Day. Do you agree? Yeah,
that's not bad. I mean, I was seeing for the Off album, it was like around 28 to 30. It's a little expensive for an EP, but it's still a 12-inch. It was fine. It wasn't any more. It would have been like 35 would have been like, or 40 would have been kind of outrageous.
True. But to be fair, it does have that cool die cut cover, which we'll talk about in a minute. However, the Peter Tosh record was $46, man, for two LPs. That's kind of bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
Two impulse buys that I got was Rich Kids, Ghosts of Princes and Towers. Of course, Rich Kids is Glenn Matlock of Sex Pistols. And Glenn Matlock and Midge Urge of Ultravox, produced by Mick Ronson of David Bowie. I've got the CD of this, not the LP. It was $22. Ricky, I couldn't pass it up. I probably should have, but I don't even love the record. I like the record. It's a good record if I picked it up. Here was the ultimate impulse buy that I didn't even know was for sale on Record Store. Ooh, $29. Ugh. I picked up Sunseed. Ricky, do you know Sunseed?
No.
Sunseed is this weird, obscure cult record. I believe it's from the it's 1977. It's Christian music, it's Christian rock, except for it's got this weird ska song called Jesus Is a Friend of Mine. And if you listen to it or watch the video, it sounds and looks like Tim and Eric or one of those, like, you know, avant comedy cable shows, but it's not. It's like this weird record. And I didn't know they were putting it out, and I just said, I'm buying this just because it is such a weird thing. So I just picked it up as an impulse. The last thing that I got as part of official Record Store Day was Off.
Nice.
As listeners probably know, Off just put out recently put out an album called Free LSD, and they recorded a whole bunch of stuff. And the 12-inch EP they put out on Record Store Day was four or five unreleased tracks on side A, and the full non-edited versions of their avant-garde tracks on side B. Ricky, what did you think of the EP?
I don't have it yet. I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting to hear what you think.
Oh, it's real cool. Honestly, I think. First of all, I thoroughly enjoy Free LSD. I think it's a great record. Ricky, did we talk about this on the podcast yet? Free LSD, the record?
I don't think we were excited about it. I don't think we actually listened to it. We had talked about it yet.
So what did you think of Free LSD?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I think I've said this on here before, but like they couldn't do the same thing again. And it was experimental. It was different. Compared to like Wasted Years, I don't think they were gonna beat that. So they needed to kind of make a weird right turn, and it seemed kind of appropriate, especially with the new lineup. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I still do.
I agree. I think it's a great record, and I agree 100% in that they couldn't do Off number four. It would just fall flat. So they did something challenging, and I love how dense it is. I would say that the songs maybe aren't quite as poppy or as catchy as Off, but that's not the point. It's a very dense work that you can listen to over and over again, and I think it's real cool.
Oh, I have a question. So,
yeah.
So, okay, so I'm just looking at my end of the year list. I put it my number three.
I put it my number two, Ricky.
There you go. Oh, so I don't understand. I've commented this on the org before, but like, it was in the music videos, DH Pellegrino is their drummer. What's the deal there? Was he supposed to be the drummer?
Great question. I don't believe they were ever seriously considering using him as a drummer. I think he was. I think I know the answer. Here's probably the answer, Ricky. As discussed in my extensive interview with Keith Morris and Dimitri Coates, right?
Yeah.
Why does it sound wrong to me? Dimitri Coates, about the record, is once Off Mark One collapsed, they brought in the bass player, the guy that played with Thundercat.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. So for a little while, they actually didn't have a drummer. So while the band was kind of falling apart and reconstructing itself, they finally did bring in the drummer for that Metallica track, and they made him the permanent drummer. I bet those scenes were shot during the time when the band was in disarray and they didn't know who their actual drummer was going to be, because there was a period, I believe, where the new bass player was also in the band at the same time as Mario Rubalcaba, briefly, and then Mario Rubalcaba quit or got fired or who knows. So those scenes were probably filmed before the current drummer actually joined the band.
Ah, okay. So that was just interesting. But no, the one question mark about the album still is like, what's the film gonna be like, and how are the songs? How's it gonna work? How's the album gonna mesh with the film?
I can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah.
I will say I think the EP, I think they played their cards very perfectly, and I think the album is a longer album for them, but it's the exact right amount of time. I think if they put on the songs from this EP, it would have been too long. The EP is actually kind of interesting in that the songs are actually kind of slower and heavier and almost more heavy metal. But I hate to use the word heavy metal because that implies a certain sense of production. I guess you could say sludgier or maybe more Melvins-ish or something. It's ironically more Melvins-ish. But it's slower and heavier and has a more mash, and it's really, really cool. The flip side is basically just sonic freak out that's more noise than it is music, which I think is very cool. And I think it is very cool for Off to take this drastic turn and just do something incredibly sonically different and challenging. The whole thing with Off when they first started, it's like, it's Keith doing Nervous Breakdown again, which was cool. And now I think it's cool they're doing something totally crazy, whacked out, and far out, which ironically sort of is what Greg Ginn does these days, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, and also the cover is a die cut, which is kind of neat. So you can change the, much in an homage perhaps to Led Zeppelin, Physical Graffiti, or Rolling Stone, Some Girl, you can change the color of the O on Off.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not like the craziest thing ever, but it's cool. It's fun. So my day was really crazy. I'm not going to drag this out. So I went to I went to Electric Avenue at 5 o'clock, got out of there at about 8:10. Then I went up to a place called Rock Shop, and they had Official Record Store Day stuff too. But they've got a certain like used section that's usually buy two, get one free. But on Record Store Day, it's buy one, get one free. And I'm like, I was going to poach. But I got there, and the line was like literally like a 3-hour line. And you couldn't just go to the used stuff. You had to wait in line with everybody. So I boarded the Mission, and I went down to one of my all-time favorite record stores. I went to Jupiter Records in Wilmington, Delaware. There was like three people in line, because they don't do record store day. They just put out like cool stuff. They had a ton of cool stuff. Ricky, I picked up a Velvet Underground with an unpeeled banana.
No, you did. Original?
Not quite original. I think the original is 1969. Mine's 1970. But for the price, Ricky, it was good enough for me.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, that's pretty good. That's like always, that's not even punk. That's just a general like record grail.
And it was sort of a closing of a circle for me, because when I first started collecting records, I used to buy records from the dollar bin at Streetlight San Jose all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In 2007 or 2008, I bought a Velvet Underground for $2 out of the dollar bin. Well, I guess the $2 bin, but whatever. But it was the record was kind of rough, and the banana was peeled. But I said, I'll sell it, and I've regretted it. Not ever since, but like 2 years afterwards, I've regretted selling it. So I finally am whole once again, you know.
Yeah.
Then I sped on down to, Sit and Spin in Philadelphia, one of my all-time favorite record shops. They had a ton of Damned albums for sale. Ricky, I got something pretty interesting that I didn't even know existed. So they had the collection of like a Damned collector maniac. He had like five versions of the first record, five versions of the, you know, Holland, Germany, UK, you know, all like every version, right? I got a version of the Black album, but I didn't even know this existed. Ricky, it's the Damned Black album, but the cover is a parody of the Beatles White album. So it's black, and it says the Damned, where the Beatles album says the Beatles.
Oh, that's cool.
I didn't even know that existed. Like I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, you know?
That's awesome.
And so that was cool. Then I went on down to Good Boy Vinyl in somewhere south of Wilmington. Pardon me, Ricky, I'm a little under the weather. But they had a lot of cool stuff. I got I got for $8, I got Pink Floyd's Relics. Ricky, are you a Pink Floyd fan? I forget.
Not really, no.
Okay. I've recently really gotten into early Sid Barrett era Pink Floyd. And Pink Floyd Relics has a lot of Sid Barrett stuff and some early Pink Floyd stuff too. Let's see here. So that's what I got there. And then I went back to Jupiter Records because their dollar room was 10 for a dollar. I got a ton of cool 7-inch singles. And so that was my record store day. Ricky, let's play a song and we'll come back. And then we'll talk about maybe some cool records that we – Actually, I'll talk about this when we come back. But let's see. What should we play? What should we play right now, Ricky? Should we play Clark Kent? Should we play The Rich Kids? What are you thinking? Tom Tom Club? We just played off. What do you think?
Can I just say one thing before we end the Record Store Day talk?
Yeah, sure.
I'm looking on eBay. The Taylor Swift record has sold for 128, 137, 150, 125, 120, 125. This thing is – the Swifties are out in full force this week.
Well, good for this. I say good for the Swifties. If they're part of keeping records alive, I'm all for it. Sure. Ricky, go ahead and play a song. What do you want to play? Unless you want to play one of the ones I suggested.
You know what? I'll play one after you. I still need to decide my next one. So go ahead.
All right. I'll play we'll play some Rich Kids, I guess. Maybe one of the lesser. Oh, actually, Ricky, record I put back, I almost bought, was Generation X reissue, the first record. I was so close to buying it because I had the fever. And I'm like, why am I buying this? I've got the original USA press, the original UK press, which are different versions of the album. I've got the CD version. I've got the deluxe CD version. Why am I buying it? Why? So I had to put it back. So I put some Generation X because Generation X is pretty cool.
Ready, steady, go. Ready, steady, go. Ready, steady, go. Ready, steady, go. I'm not in love with television. I'm not in love with the radio. I'm not in love with the keystroke. Because I'm in love.
And we are back. Ricky, get any cool records otherwise lately? Because every day is Record Store Day, Ricky. So,
sure.
So, get anything outside of Record Store Day recently?
Yeah, so I'm just going to go through my Instagram just from back January. One, I just wanted to ask you, I've been meaning to ask you about this for a while. So in December, I got the Blood Clot Souls record. I wanted to know what your opinion of that was.
I thought it was all right.
Yeah, that's where I was about to. Okay, yeah, that's what I wanted to know.
So here's my, I'll give my opinion. I guess the first question is, should we even mention Harley and Cro-Mags, or is that irrelevant now when talking about Blood Clot and John Joseph?
I think it's irrelevant. It's basically over.
So then basically, here's my opinion of Blood Clot. John Joseph, good singer, one of the more unique singers in punk rock. I think both with now you liked Up in Arms more than I liked Up in Arms. I thought Up in Arms was a relatively weak record because really? to me, Up in Arms, it's like the songs had no song craft. It sounded like heavy metal musicians trying to do punk rock. So riff, 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 bridge, 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 riff, 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 bridge, 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 riff, 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 bridge, 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 coda.
Wow.
To me, that was like every song, and I was very bored by it. Uh-huh. I think Soul suffers from the same thing, except for the music. Now, of course, Up in Arms had some great musicians on it. It had Nick Oliveri, Joey Castillo, right? Isn't he on that record?
Yeah.
And who's the other guy that was also Todd Youth? Yeah. I mean, that's a killer lineup. I just thought that the song craft wasn't good enough. Wow. Ricky, that record was 2017, 6 years ago. That does not feel like 6 years ago. I would have guessed two years. You know? Wow. With Souls, to me, it was kind of the same thing. I think it's cool that they covered the Bad Brains. But I thought the lyrics were kind of dumb, and I think the music is just it feels like they didn't put enough work. That's my opinion.
It felt very metalish to me, and it kind of came off as a little lazy. But I liked it, but I don't know. It's sort of fallen off my radar. So I'll just kind of go through the stuff, just the highlights. On my birthday, I like going to Amoeba or like getting a couple of grails online for myself because no one in my family really knows what to get me in when it comes to records. So I just kind of find some stuff on my own. I went to Amoeba in January. I found just one 7-inch, but it was really cool. It was the Neighbors 7-inch by Fear. I found it on their wall. It's the first pressing it's clear with black splatter, but John, guess what else is on it?
You mean song wise or
just on the cover?
Leaving Signature.
Yes.
That's cool.
So that was very cool. Limited to 100 copies. Very happy with that. And then, I got this is from 2013. The 7-inch is already 10 years old. The iFat NY little comp with Nightbirds and Flatliners and Good Riddance and Western Addiction. I got that. I thought that was really cool. I think you're gonna like this. I got the self-titled record by Blondie from not the Chrysalis era. Private Stock. I had been looking for this forever for a good price. I am so happy I finally got this. It's like VG. Or so. I mean, it's beaten up from the 70s, but it's great.
That's if listeners don't know, is people think that Blondie was on a major label from the get-go, but that's not true. Their first album was actually self-released, and then it got re-put out on a major label. So that's very cool. So that, Ricky, that means the record you have was most likely put together by Chris Stein and maybe even Debbie Harry. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Is the music the same, or is it like different mixes, or like what's the deal?
I think it's the same. I haven't compared. I've never had this record until I got this one, but I wanted
That's
the
cool.
original.
That's cool.
Thank you. So the next one, then I got Alkaline Trio, One Man Army, BYO split on red vinyl, which has been impossible to find. It was very cool that the seller put in the hype poster too. And this one's been getting hard to find too. Not the original. So Against Me is the original Cowboy, not not the original album.
The Eternal Cowboy.
Yeah, exactly. The Eternal Cowboy. I got this on, I found it on Light Blue first pressing. So those are like my birthday grails for myself. And then I was in Albuquerque in January, late January, for business and for a convention. And I found this awesome little record store, comic book shop. Great. It's not a huge record store, but the punk section is spectacular. It's called Astro Zombies. And I found a couple of cool, like, Misfits 7-inches. I got, and they're bootlegs, obviously, but I got the Cool Cough 7-inch on red vinyl. I got Who Killed Marilyn on purple.
What's the sound quality on those bootlegs? Are they, maybe you can't even tell, but are they taken from the CD or are they, like, just dubbed from the real record? Like, how do they sound?
Not great.
Yeah.
They weren't great. And then, so I wanted to just mention On a Hiding from Nothing, the We'll Probably Be Fine record that I played a song off of earlier. It's a very limited press, only 100 copies on red, and I think they did 100 on orange or something like that, but I managed to get the red one. And then I got to tell you, I don't even know what to say here, but I don't know if you got this, John, but the Hellcat repressed No Gods, No Managers on clear vinyl.
Indeed I did, and I thought that was going to, like, sell out in 5 seconds, but it didn't, weirdly.
I know. I jumped on it as soon as I saw it. I go, whoa, what's going on here? So I got that because, I mean, they never repressed that one, so that was cool.
I didn't even play mine, honestly. Did you play yours?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I just got it just to have it, honestly.
So,
Ricky, there are now 3 versions of No Gods, No Managers. There's the original one with no barcode. There's the standard Hellcat version, and now there's the clear version.
Yeah. So I think I have that second one, and I have the clear one now. And then this was like, I've been trying to just, I finally finished my Nightbirds collection. I'm aside from like the really rare stuff and cassettes and CDs, but they were on a four-way split called Adult Crash 2. With Violent Reaction, Government Warning, and Bard. So I got like the red version of that with the book that came with it. I'm almost done, I promise.
Take your time, man.
In non-punk news, I no pun intended. I grew up listening to like Nick Lowe and Rockpile. It's what my dad sort of showed us when we were kids.
I think you can make the argument that Nick Lowe is vaguely punk. I mean, he's basically like pals with Elvis Costello, and Elvis Costello has always been on that periphery, you know?
Yeah, he was on Stiff Records. He's on that comp with the Damned, and he actually, I believe he produced their first record.
I think he might be. Well, I know he produced Elvis Costello's first record. He might have produced the first Damned record. I think he did. Let's look.
So this is really hard to find, but I grew up listening to this comp. It's on CD, and it's called Basher, the Very Best of Nick Lowe. It was only pressed in the UK in 1989. It's a double LP with 10 more songs than the CD. And I finally got it in great condition. I think it was only played like once. And that was a really, really good find off Discogs. And then I got to hand it to you, John. You got me into Bad Time Records, and I've been slowly going through, I've been slowly checking out what they've had for pre-order, and that Omnigon album, Against the Rest, is awesome. Like, it's really, really good. And so I got that on red and with white splatter. And then I got a couple of Neighborhood Brats 7-inches. I'm trying to finish their finish that collection up. And then aside from Classics of Love, the last one I'll mention is have you been following the Private Function saga of their new record?
Didn't they put out like a record that had like piss in it or something like that?
So there's more than one like debacle with this record. So first of all, yes, they did. they did like addition of 50 with the band's pee in each physical record, and it was
that's punk and amusing. I'll give them that's punk and amusing. I dig that.
Yeah, so I think they put a certain illegal substance in their last record like that with like 50, which was
Well, what substance? Like weed or like something heavier than weed?
Heavier than weed. I'll just leave it at that. So that was hilarious. But so what they did was, so they put out an absolutely, I think it's the best record of the year so far. Private Functions, Hello Asshole is, it's so good. It's such a good party punk album, I guess. And what they did was it got held up a little bit with the government, because in Australia, you can't do like a giveaway or like a raffle more than 3,000 Australian dollars. But what they've been doing is for the first pressing, they made their cover a scratch off like a lottery ticket, and they're still waiting for the person to find to get the three bananas scratched off on their album to win basically like $2,999.99. And I think they're going to feature the person in the next pressing on the cover. So there was that whole thing. They weren't able to, the government had to like step in and say like, you can't sell this in a certain part of Australia if you do that. So if you do that's more than cool. $3,000, something like that, $3,000, something like that. I didn't, the P-Field record was like pretty expensive, especially with shipping from Australia. I don't recall, but like you're lucky to get $20 just for shipping from Australia these days. I think it was like 100. Was it 100? I don't really recall. So I got the green pressing. This album absolutely rules. It's very cool that they threw in some stickers too. yeah, that's for the most part. That's what I've collected since the beginning of the year. Hope that wasn't too long winded.
No. I remember Integrity put out a blood version of Humanity's a Devil that had liquid blood in it, not real blood, but or maybe real, you know. And I didn't buy one because it was $100. And I regret it because it's such a cool thing. But also Now they're like $700. So I wish I had bought like three, you know.
Right.
But you know what?
I would have felt more comfortable with getting the P-filled one if it wasn't coming from Australia. Like, that's a long way. And if it breaks, it's over.
Well, actually, that was a problem with the Integrity record, is that like a lot of them did break and the blood leaked out. Like those liquid records are very they're really not meant to be played.
Exactly. So I want something to be played. So I just went with the green, and I'm not going to do the scratch off. I'm leaving it pristine.
I think you should do it, Ricky, because you'll never know. You know.
Exactly.
So fair enough. I'll just name a couple of interesting things that I got recently. One interesting thing, Ricky, I didn't even know this thing existed until a couple of weeks ago when I just saw it online and I bought it. Dead Kennedys Frankenchrist made in Australia. Do you know why it's special?
Well, I'm just thinking about my copy, and I have the controversial art in it. Did they have it in that one?
No. But check this out. Splatter colored vinyl from 1986, which was like really rare then. You know what I mean?
Whoa, what?
It's like blue and purple sort of. And it's just kind of a cool thing. Similarly, not that long ago, I got a copy of Black Flag's My War made in 1990 on blue vinyl, 1990, which is kind of cool. But I got a couple other interesting things to mention here. So I actually went to a flea market on Sunday, and for $3, I got Them's Here Comes the Night. Them is Van Morrison's band before he was Van Morrison, kind of a garage rock band. It has the song Gloria that like every band in the world covered. Honestly, I'm not a huge fan of Van Morrison. I'm not really a fan of Them. But on the back of this record that was $3, it says courtesy of, well, Bill Harper, courtesy of Universal Record Distribution Corp, 919 North Broad Street, Philadelphia, PA. Sample. And then on the very bottom, it's stamped July 6, 1965. Ricky, this is a very obscure question. Do you know why that makes this record of interest, Bill Harper, courtesy of Universal Record Distribution Corp?
Why?
Well, the Beastie Boys have a song on their last album, and the song is called The Bill Harper Collection, and it's in reference to Bill Harper, their accountant. Before Bill Harper was an accountant, he was a music A&R and a music distribution salesman. Ricky, this record is from the Bill Harper collection, as mentioned by the Beastie Boys on the Beastie Boys song, The Bill Harper Collection. What do you think of that?
Wow.
That's kind of weird, isn't it?
Really weird, yeah.
Actually, Ricky, have you noticed this on within the past 6 months or so on Discogs, scammers and phony listings have skyrocketed. Have you noticed that?
So I'm in one Facebook group, like vinyl Facebook group, and
yeah,
I haven't been noticing that, but I have been seeing people complain about it a lot.
Well, I've seen it. I think it's rampant. So
yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
So check this out, Ricky. Not that long ago, I was on Facebook. I was just kind of cruising around. And I was looking at Max Romeo's War in Babylon, which is a very famous reggae record produced by Lee Scratch Perry with Max Romeo singing. And I clicked on Test Press. And somebody had a Test Press there for $10. This is as iconic as it gets in reggae. 1977 Test Press, $10. The seller was one of these ultra sellers that has like 100,000 items for sale. And so I said, this has got to be a mislisting. Like, even if it's a normal one, though, for $10, I could just resell that. So it's worth the risk. Ricky, I click buy it now. And about a week later in the mail, I get a package and I open it up. And it is a 1977 Test Press of Max Romeo's War in Babylon. And it is stamped Upsetter, which is Lee Scratch Perry's name and what he uses as a producer. I have a genuine Test Press for $10 that might have been stamped by Lee Scratch Perry himself for $10. It's like 1998 all over again, Ricky.
Yeah. I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast. What's your take on Test Presses? I get them very seldomly.
Test Presses, the first couple you get, you're like, wow, a Test Press, neato. And then after you have like three or four of them, then they're kind of not that special. And you're like, yeah, it's a Test Press. They're actually not that hard to find, you know. But that being said, a Test Press of one of the most iconic reggae records of all time, I was pretty excited about. Similarly along those lines, I was on Discogs, I was cruising around, I was looking at Chumbawamba, and I saw Chumbawamba, Nevermind the Bouts, which was the second Chumbawamba album. Test Press for that album, $80. I bought it like that. I got it in the mail. So I got two kind of legendary Test Presses for me in the span of like 2 weeks, which was crazy. So, yes, I mean, I don't go nuts over it for Test Presses, but if they come around and if they're cheap, I'm certainly going to get them. But yeah, I'm not going to pay market value for most of them just because I don't care that much, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I got one. I didn't post it, but I did get one because I keep an eye out on the Fat Wreck ones. They usually auction them off on eBay. I mean, my grail Test Press is of Morning Glory's War Psalms. Good luck getting that. But I did get a white Test Press from Fat of Clowns' Nature Nurture. But like I jumped at that, but it's not something that I need all the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They're cool. And the first time you get them, you're like, wow, this is like the super rare thing that no one has. But right, then after you collect records for a while, you realize that while Test Presses are rare, they're not that rare. You know what I mean? Like, now if you want a Test Press of a specific record, it'd be hard to get. But if you just want like, say, a Rolling Stones Test Press, or a Beatles Test Press, or even a Clash Test Press, not that hard to get. You know what I mean? So.
Right.
So anyway, I guess the two last things that we're going to talk about is, first of all, this is going to be posted before Saturday. So if you are in the Philadelphia area, on Saturday, I am starting a record convention in Philadelphia at Philomoka, right on Spring Garden near Union Transfer. That's going to be Saturday, April 29, $10 at 10 a.m. to get in, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., $5 to get in. We're going to have at least 15,000 records for sale, maybe 20,000, maybe 25,000. Sam Barrett's going to be there. We're going to have some stores, including Creep Records, Revolt Records, Sit and Spin Records, as well as some private vendors. So it's going to be a real cool party, man. And basically, I'm trying to get there actually hasn't been a Philadelphia record convention for about 7 or 8 years. There's a Cherry Hill one, but not a Philadelphia one. So I'm trying to get a Philadelphia record convention up and rolling once again. Secondly, on May 26, 2023, Dwarves with Zorn and Dambert No Bacon of Chumbawamba and Vixen 77 and Mikey Erg at Philomoka. It's going to be extremely rad. Tickets are about 66% sold out. So if you want to go, and you should want to go, you should go because we have a lot of cool stuff planned. Among one of the many cool things planned is we have limited edition Dwarves Legacy Records. And basically, you can see them all on the Punk News Instagram. I made a bunch of parodies of like Dark Side of the Moon, Beatles White Album, Rolling Stones Sticky Fingers, Misfits Earth AD. And they are hyper limited edition Dwarves records with parody covers. Some of them are as limited as 4 copies. Some are 15 or 20 copies. But the only place to get them will be at Summer Soiree 6. And they look really rad. And so I'm super pumped on that.
Yeah, I saw them. They're hilarious, John. You did a great job with them. They're good. They're really, really good.
Well, thank you, Rick. Yeah, I was actually really pleased with how they came out. The weird thing was I sent them off to the printer, and I was talking to the printer on eBay. I'm not eBay, on email. And I thought it was like a young person. And then so I sent it off at like 10 a.m. And I thought it was going to be like a couple of weeks. I get an email at like 11:15. Your order's ready. I'm like, what? So I go down there. Oh, Ricky, I felt so bad. It was 2 super nice old people. And I'm sending these records like Blood, Guts, and Pussy. And like one of the covers has like a girl in panties on the cover. I'm like, oh, I'm an asshole.
And all the dicks with the skulls, really.
Yeah, right.
Good stuff. Good stuff, John.
I mean, I was worried about them not printing it due to copyright issues, even though I would say it's definitely fair use. But, you know, like, I was not expecting old people to say, honestly, I felt bad. I think the reason it was done so quickly, I think they were kind of slow. So I think maybe they couldn't turn it away, you know, but like these 70 some year old people print out, you know, girls in panties and dick skulls. I'm like, oh, God. Well, Ricky, once again, we have successfully talked about records as we do. And the time has just flown by.
It really has. Do we want to go? Are we done, or do we want to go through just stuff we're looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to hang some more, I'll hang some more.
Yeah, I got like a half hour.
Yeah.
I think.
What are you looking forward to?
So let's see here. I mean, I've heard some of these records, but one I think we definitely need to mention is the new Public Serpents record, The Bully Puppet. That's with Squirt from Choking Victim. John, are you there?
Yes, Ricky. I'm familiar with, okay, Squirt of Choking Victim, who's featured prominently in my book, Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History of Leftover Crack. And of course, Squirt and Sturgeon are the reasons why Choking Victim broke up.
So I'm
familiar with Public Serpents and Squirt.
No, I was making sure we were still connected. So I'm really I've heard the album. It's awesome. But I'm looking forward to getting my splatter pressing of that. I gotta tell you, M got me into Gel, so I have a UK version first pressing coming hopefully later this month. The new Frenzel Rom record I'm waiting for, that's going to be really good. And then another Bad Time Records album, the Jay Navarro and the Traitors record, I pre-ordered last week. And then I believe my new Brutal Youth record is coming in the mail as well. So, but I actually have a question for you, John. I've been wanting to get your opinion on this because I don't know if you've listened to it or not, but did you listen to the Codefendants record?
I listen to some of the tracks, yes.
Oh, that's not a ringing endorsement then.
Did you listen to it?
I did. I've listened to it twice, and I'm not sure where I'm at with it, to be honest.
I'll tell you where I'm at. Did you get that email from Fat? I mean, it wasn't a personal email, but did you get that general email from Fat Mike?
Yeah, saying like, didn't it say like how like proud he was of it and everything?
Yeah, he's like, I've never sent out an email. Or he's like, I haven't sent out an email in like 15 years.
Yeah.
And he's like, but I'm sending this out because I'm so proud of this record. And it's like, well, it's always interesting when an artist puts out a record that people aren't expecting and isn't maybe what they want, you know? Sometimes it's the artist being way far ahead of everybody and actually doing, you know, the greatest thing they've ever done. Let me think of some examples. Rudimentary Penis Cacophony wasn't really understood when it first came out. Absolute masterwork. or I'm trying to think of some other records that look were ahead of their time and now everyone loves. Maybe Beatles' White Album was actually controversial when it came out, even though it sold millions and millions of records. You know, but then sometimes like artists are like, I'm so proud, this is like the best thing I've ever done, and then it's just absolute garbage, you know. And then sometimes it's not clear which it is. Clash of Sandinista. Some people say it's the best record, some people say it's the worst. You know, I'm glad Fat Mike is excited. Actually, so here's my final word on the Co-Defenders. I'm glad Fat Mike is excited, and I think it's cool he's experimenting, because the fact of the matter is NoFX has done what NoFX is going to do. That being said, some very artistic people, and Mike is very artistic and he's very clever, is they kind of need a counterweight. If we look at South Park, there's Matt Stone and Trey Parker. I think it's Trey Parker does the vast majority of the work, but everyone in the studio is a yes man. Like, that's the best idea ever. That's the best idea ever. Matt Stone, unless I'm getting them switched, Matt Stone is the only guy who says, no, that's not funny. That's stupid. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think maybe Fat Mike, as clever and as creative as he is, I think he might need a counterweight to fight back on certain ideas, you know? And also, it's very, very, very hard to combine hip hop and rock, and especially punk, and not be cheesy. The only band that's ever done it, I think, is the Beastie Boys, and they don't even really have any punk hip hop tracks. They have hip hop tracks and punk tracks, you know.
Yeah.
Can you? Oh, actually, I will give you the one what do you call it when something outside the rule? The one exception. Ricky, you'll appreciate this. Morning Glory on This Is No Time to Sleep. There's that one rap track that's like, is it Drop the Bomb or whatever that track is?
Yeah, but I think the exception I was going to tell you, and I'll bring it back to Morning Glory in that song, is the exception is, I would say Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'll definitely give you that.
But it's funny because the guitar work and the effects on that song you're talking about sounds exactly like Calm Like a Bomb from The Battle of Los Angeles by Rage Against the Machine.
I agreed on all points.
Yeah, Ricky, so I don't know if Morning Glory was just it was making fun of them or just experimenting. I don't know.
I think it's probably an experiment, because the two rappers, I think it's like Loonies and Loon or whatever, those guys are like real rappers, so I don't think they would parody if it was like a diss on Rage Against the Machine. I think maybe it was, you know, Ezra was very experimental on that album, and I still think it's the best one.
It's so good.
It really is so good, and Ezra really should put out a vinyl version, but he's just not going to.
Nope.
But Ricky, did you see that recent interview with Tom Morello regarding Rage Against the Machine?
No, I didn't.
So Tom Morello did an interview with Rolling Stone, and the guy kept asking him, so is Rage done? And Tom Morello didn't say no. I mean, he didn't say yes, but he definitely didn't say no either. And he was being so vague, and so things don't look good in Rage Against the Machine world, Ricky. I hate to tell you. I know you love the band.
I'm honestly watching so many like reunions and stuff like that. I'm kind of okay with that, especially with how bad Prophets of Rage was.
They were bad.
I mean, I shit canned that band so hard. My name is on the Wikipedia of their record.
It is. Oh, let me look.
Yeah. So at least on the record, my review from Punk News did that. But anyway, when back to Co-Defendants, just real quick. There's some songs I really like. The folk punk on that album is great, but I just can't get into the hip hop or rap rock stuff that much. I think I need to sit with it. I kind of have to, because I pre-ordered the vinyl, because I thought I love the 10-inch that they put out with Get Dead. So I don't know. John, while you're looking, do you what records do you have on pre-order?
I don't know if I, let's see, I'm trying, well, I actually, I've got the Sublime $5 at the door. Finally, like when Sublime put out like a live record about 10 years ago now, I don't remember the name of it, but it was actually, I'm looking up right now. It was absolutely fantastic. And they were like, Sublime, the bootleg series volume one, implying that there's going to be like a ton of live records. And they put out one, Three Ring Circus, live at the Palace, October 21, 1995. Awesome live record. They do like a bunch of like non-studio tracks, And then that was the last thing. Now they've got a new live album called $5 at the Door, which I pre-ordered, which I'm excited about. I think it's already out, but mine's going to take a while to get here because I pre-ordered the Rancid record as well, actually. I haven't pre-ordered a Rancid record since Let the Dominoes Fall, when I was so disappointed with that record. But I did dig the new Rancid track, so I pre-ordered that. I don't have high hopes, but we'll see.
I was split on that one. I didn't. I'm going to hold out. I'm going to hold off until I hear it.
Yeah, I think that's probably the wise move, frankly. I will admit that I did pre-order a very limited vinyl color, and I'm like, oh, well, if I don't like it, I can always get rid of it. You know what I mean? So,
right.
So, but I'm very psyched about the Sublime record, because Sublime is so good live. And actually, it looks like it's got some songs that aren't on any of the albums, like a song called Romantic Girl, Winner Takes All, Jai's My Light, Good College. So, yeah, man, a lot. So, Prison Oval Rock, that's cool. A cover of Barrington Levy. That's neat. So I'm very excited about that. I ordered the new Scowl record. I've already heard it, so I'm waiting to get that in the mail. I'm trying to think, what else have I ordered? Oh, just in the mail. I haven't even listened to it yet. I got the new Fucked Up 7-inch single, which I'm very excited to listen to, but I actually haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, called Cops. And it looks like the cover, I mean, it's an homage to their album The Police.
Yeah.
So will this be fucked up, like doing straight up hardcore again, or is it like a total fake out?
That piqued my interest. I wasn't sure. That's another one I'm waiting to see, like, what happens. I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard Public Serpents on your list, though.
Listen, Ricky, there's so many records to buy, you can't buy them all. Even though sure. I tried to do that on Record Store Day, much to my chagrin now. But yeah, man, I mean, listen, I'll definitely, I mean, I've heard some of it, I'll definitely check it out. It's cool. I'm trying to think what else is interesting coming out. The new Zorn record is killer. The new Screaming Females record is killer. And I think that's about what I've got on pre-order. I'm trying to think of anything else. Oh, the Melvins just did a bunch of cool reissues, which I'm excited about. The Oxbow record coming out looks real cool. And I think that's about what I've got on pre-order, Ricky. I mean, honestly, Ricky, like, I don't even really pre-order that much anymore, just because, and I'm not complaining, so much stuff comes out these days that I want. You know what I mean? I'm to a degree, I'm overwhelmed. I'm actually behind on stuff that I need to pick up or don't need to but want to pick up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and, I meant to say this earlier, just about supporting record stores. You know, I've been getting frustrated with, like, the streaming services like Netflix and stuff like that. And the record stores, at least near me, they have, like, used DVDs for $4, which is what you would pay for a movie to rent through YouTube. So I've been doing that a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like DVDs are basically freebies. I went to Jupiter Records, they had the 10 for one, so you could get DVDs for 10 cents each. The only difference there is that, like, if you want to watch something specific, it can be hard to get. But I love DVDs. I was actually watching a Rush VHS that I got for 10 cents earlier today, Ricky. So
very nice.
So, yeah, but listen, man, the rec store has got tons of stuff, man. And you don't need a big wallet to buy cool stuff, man. Sometimes you only need 10 cents, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and one more that I forgot about. Do you know the Instagram account Punk Rock Vinyl? He's out of the UK. He kind of, like, posts, like, what's up for pre-order.
Yeah.
So he's actually putting out a compilation that was up for pre-order. So I'm waiting for that. I think he posted that the test press didn't come out the way he was expecting, so it's a little bit delayed, but I pre-ordered that too, because that's pretty cool to put that out independently.
Yeah, well, and there's a good lesson in there. People always check your test press. There are so many bands that don't check their test press, even though they're paying for it and regret it later. You always have to check the test press. Always. I'll tell you what else I pre-ordered, Ricky. Cleopatra's been doing a pretty good job of reissuing the Later Day Danzig albums, Danzig 7, Danzig 8. So I've been buying those, even though I have the originals. But, you know, I figured the originals are so expensive and so rare. If I'm going to play, maybe I ought to just get the new ones. The drawback is the sound quality isn't always the best with Cleopatra. And, that's what Cleopatra does, frankly, Ricky. So, you know. All right, man. Well, Ricky, man, always a good time, dude. I'm looking forward to the Record Store Day Black Friday edition of this, assuming you're not too busy, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, I think I'll be fine. John, it's always a pleasure. I can't wait to do this, in a few months. And I'm just trying to think of anything else. No, that's pretty much it. I mean, follow me on, if you want to follow my record collection, Odyssey, at DesertPerson92 on Instagram. And again, John, it's always a pleasure. Or I'll see you. And if you're a commenter, I'll see you, in Navel Gazing Weekly.
Well, sounds good, Ricky. Once again, always great to have you on. And let's close this out with some more. Ricky, should we close this out with the Morning Glory rap track? I think we should close this out with the Morning Glory rap track.
Yeah, let's do that. That'd be fun.
This is Morning Glory off their super hard to find record and really great record. This is No Time to Sleep. And we'll see you soon.
don't get your kill, but don't play your best. It's when the people rally that they relapse. Feel a threat.
Get up off your ass, cause time's moving fast. No day is promised, this might be your last. The time is now, you can't control the crowd. The American nightmare is a mushroom cloud.
There you go.